Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Just as promised, the president of Ignatius Press here this hour to take your calls. Mark Brumley, also the author of Seven Deadly Sins of Apologetics. Hi, Mark. Oh, well, we'll get to Mark in a second. Let me give out the number. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you have a question about anything having to do with the Catholic faith, you are welcome to call this hour. 888-318-7884, the number. I'm sorry we had a momentary difficulty with Mark, but it does give me a chance to talk about something I wanted to mention to Mark. Is I see that on the Ignatius Press website, they have a new book out, and I'm not actually sure how new it is, on St. Jose, Boy Cristero Martyr. One of the most wonderful saints of the 20th century. And now they got a kid's book for him from the acclaimed Vision book series on the lives of saints for young people 9 to 15. So if you're looking for something for your youngin' to read as the new school year starts, maybe St. Jose, Boy Cristero Martyr would be the book for him. Do we have Mark back yet?
No. Yeah, I'm here. All right. Never left you guys. You guys left me.
Maybe I turned a knob or a dial or something that I wasn't. But I was just
that big button that said, get rid of Mark.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to push the eject button? Oh, yeah. My bad.
Sorry about that.
I misunderstood that. So you heard me talking about this book you've got, St. Jose.
Just a little bit. Heard you talk a little bit about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, lots of kids heading back to school. They're going to need a book to read.
That is a great book.
Yeah, that's a good one. St. Jose is a hero of our president, Chris Cech. He loves that guy.
Oh, I thought you meant President Trump.
Oh, I don't know if President Trump knows about St. Jose, the Cristero Martyr.
Well, maybe we'll send him a book, you know.
It wouldn't do him any harm. I'll tell you what, it never hurts to read about the saints. It doesn't hurt anybody.
There you go. Absolutely.
Yeah. So all is well there at Ignatius Press. You all are still the most important Catholic publisher in the quadrant?
Well, we are. We do our part, let's put it that way. We just came out with Cardinal Seurat's new book. The day is now far spent, and that's exciting, and it's, you know, something we want everybody to go out to the local Catholic bookstore to purchase, and if they can't get it there, they can get it online, various places, Ignatius.com, among others, and I think it's number one in Catholic books on Amazon, so there you are.
Hey, I'm really glad to hear you supporting your local Catholic bookstore, because we don't say that enough, but like the Amazons and those of the world can really crush local bookstores. And your local Catholic bookstore is a great resource for books, and also probably they've got gifts there and cards and holy cards and that kind of stuff. I'm glad you said that, Mark.
Yeah, well, we usually encourage people to first check out their local bookstores. You know, we're kind of distributist in that way, you know, Chesterton and Small is Beautiful and all that kind of stuff. And we think it's really good to support these local Catholic stores because they regard it really as an apostolate. They're serving the church. Oftentimes they don't make much money. Oftentimes they lose money. But they're doing this because they really want to reach people with the gospel of Jesus Christ and the teachings of the Catholic Church. And that's why these stores are there. So it's great when you go out and support them. Now, I know they're people say, well, I don't have a Catholic bookstore nearby, and that's fine. There are other ways you can get books, including online, but it's good to support the stores when we can.
888-318-7884, the number. It is open forum. Mark Brumley is our guest. A whole bunch of people are on the line. Are you ready, Mark?
I am ready if you are.
All right, let's start with Mike in Phoenix, Arizona, watching on YouTube Live. Mike, your question for Mark.
I just had a quick question. I was wondering if the Baltimore Catechism is still considered legitimate.
Sure. It's considered legitimate in that it's, you know, obviously an earlier expression in the form of a catechism of the Catholic faith. But there have been things that have changed in the church in terms of the church's liturgical practices and spiritual disciplines and things of that sort. And those won't be reflected in the Baltimore Catechism. There's also more contemporary issues that our society has to deal with that didn't exist in the 19th century, in 19th century America. So obviously, the Baltimore Catechism is not going to address those issues. But in terms of the basic content of the catechism, it does not change. So yes, it's still worthwhile. There is a post-Vatican II, I think it was published in 67 or 68, edition of the Baltimore Catechism, which I used with my kids at times growing up, among other things. We used we used the Faith and Life series and a number of other resources. So that's available.
Okay, Mike?
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Thanks very much for getting us started. Let's go to Sue in Columbus, Ohio, listening on AM 820 there in Columbus. Sue, your question for Mark.
Yeah. Thank you for being available to answer questions and all. I was listening to the gal from Australia and the question about praying and to people that are already dead and how that all worked and how Jesus tells them what is relevant. And I've wondered, though, when I've been doing some study on this, but when you talk about praying for Mary's intercession, and then it makes my head spin because I'm thinking, well, then is Jesus telling her to somebody wants her to intercede to him, and you know, it's kind of making my head spin. So I wondered if you could speak to that.
Let me just let Mark know. The question was about how saints might know that someone is praying for their help. And Jimmy went through several options, including one that God would let them know. So I'm taking the question to be, okay, so you might pray to Mary to ask her intercession. And so is God letting Mary know to pray for that person to God? Is that kind of the cycle you're concerned with, Sue?
Okay. Seems like you're asking Mary, but by virtue of asking her, you're asking Jesus to tell her that
someone's asking for their prayers. Yeah. Okay, Mark.
Yeah, and what I'd say, that's a good question. I'd say this: we always have to be careful when we talk about things in the next life, things that have to do with eternity and the presence of God, how God does things in eternity. We must be careful when we do that because we are drawing on language from this life, and we know how things work in this life. And sometimes, in order to kind of get at this mysterious life of the age to come, we have to use lots of different things from this life, and we have to understand that they have a kind of figurative dimension. So the idea is, okay, God knows everything. The saints in heaven find out what's going on earth through God. So God is telling them what they need to know so that they can then intercede with God on our behalf through Jesus. And that sounds like a complex process. But we should stop and think about the fact that in this world, in this life, God has established the world in such a way that we can learn things, we can know things about one another and our needs. And so just as you can learn from me that I have a need, I do right now, like everybody be praying for my mom who's coming towards the end of her life, you know, so I ask people to pray for her. Well, how do they find out? I tell them. Okay, so God has established in the natural order of the world a way by which we can become aware of one another's needs. And then once we're aware of those needs, we can approach God, even though God has made it possible in this world. He's the one who's made possible in this world our ability to know one another's needs. Nevertheless, we can then, once we know, we can approach God and ask him to intervene, and we can pray for one another. Well, similarly, God has made it possible. How that happens, I don't know exactly, but God has made it possible for the saints in heaven to know the needs of people on earth. And however that happens, whether there's I'm being a little facetious here, a divine telephone or divine radio service or divine internet, whatever the analogy we want to use is, that represents the way by which people in God's presence, in communion with God, come to know about the needs of people on earth. Whatever that means is, they come to know it, and they can then, on that basis, pray for us. That's what we call, you know, the communion of saints or the intercession of the saints. So we don't want to press the point too much to make it sound like heaven is one big party line where everybody gets on and you know, God has set up the party line or whatever. But we do have, just as in this life, God allows us to come to know one another's needs and concerns. So in the next life, God allows the saints in heaven to come to know the needs and concerns of people on earth so that they can pray through Jesus in the Spirit for their brothers and sisters on earth. Does that help?
I'm thinking in terms of this earth, and that's not necessarily how it's going to be.
I like the idea of a divine internet, though. I'm glad that idea was introduced into the whole conversation.
I thought you would prefer a divine radio network, but...
I don't want to work. I'm not looking forward to working on the other side.
There you go.
I'm looking forward to eating cookies, divine cookies, and being in the presence of the Lord. Sue, thanks very much. But the reason there were cookies on my mind is because Erica's here. Mark, you know Erica Olson here?
Hi.
Yeah. Hi, Erica. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, Mark was with us at our conference.
Two years ago.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I'm here to invite everyone to the conference. Mark, are you coming?
I wanted to come, but I'm doing a diocesan event up here in Northern California that time.
All right, I'll give you a pass.
Sorry.
But anybody who doesn't
have... There's very few things more noble than being at the service of the local church.
That's true.
You should put yourself at the
That's
service.
True.
It's very true. But if you're not and you don't have anything to do on the weekend of September 26th
through 29th. Wow, you're really selling this. If you have nothing better to do,
we're having a national conference. If your agenda is open, you should come to our conference. It's going to be really awesome. And I can't say enough great things about it. There's only less than 3 weeks left.
Yeah.
2.5 weeks left
and
for you to get your tickets.
And far fewer than 200 tickets available. So.
Yes, fewer than 200 tickets available. And it's just around the corner. So if you are thinking about coming, you need to buy your tickets because I will close registration as well prior to conference date. So I usually do that about a week before. So really, you only have a week and a half to get your tickets, everyone.
Uh-oh.
You'll want to do that. And
Catholic
everybody who comes... Oh, I was going to talk about your cookie.
First, I was going to give the address because
okay,
you got to give it out.
It.
Catholic
go.
Answers... I mean, if you're inviting people, they got to know how to get there. CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Yes.
CatholicAnswersConference.com. And I'm sorry, I see you brought the cookie to do the big cookie reveal.
I did bring a cookie. Look,
but I did it with Carlo yesterday.
Can you see it?
I should. That's the cookie.
If you're on Facebook or YouTube,
Thomas will get you on there in a second.
Do you got it on there, Thomas?
That's what we call cookie cam.
This is Cy Kellett
in
the shape of
a cookie. Or maybe it's really actually a cookie in the shape of Cy Kellett. I mean, it's...
This is true.
Because Cy Kellett is already in the shape of a cookie.
That's pretty uncanny. They did a really great job in getting you...
Somebody told me it looks like Bob Vila. Which is, I think that's a promotion. I'm happy to look like Bob Vila. But,
that's totally true, actually, a little bit.
I'm a cookie.
That's very true. But if you come, you get this awesome cookie souvenir to either save for the rest of your life.
Or just eat it.
And put on a shelf. Or just eat it.
Or give it to me and I'll eat it.
Eat Cy's face.
So CatholicAnswersCookie.com. Well, no, it's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
You only have, again, a week and a half left to get your tickets. We have a great lineup. All of our apologists, Tim, Jimmy, Trent, Carlo, and then we have Monsignor Eugene Morris, Father David McConey, Rod Bennett, and Bishop Frank Cajano is coming. Father Paul Check will be there. Chris Check will be there just walking around. Who else? So many people. Father Hugh Barber will be there.
Tell you guys, I was going to be there, but because I got asked to be with the Catechetical Conference in Santa Rosa, you know, it's my local church, kind of felt like that should be my priority, but I would have been there. And I'm going to tell you guys, it's going to be a great conference. All the people listening, you know, it looks at how the early church was Catholic, and there's a lot of controversy there. People question that, you know, they have this idea that the early church was something else and then later on it became Catholic. But you got first-rate apologists and scholars showing how no, there's continuity going back all the way back to Jesus. So.
Yeah, that's true. You're going to get such a great defense of your faith, and then you're going to have a great time with 800 of your best Catholic friends.
1,000.
That's right.
That's right.
CatholicAnswersConference.com.
It's common for atheists to object to belief in God because it can't be proven false by empirical observation. But this objection fails because the principle it assumes, called the verification principle, is self-refuting. It states, a belief is true or false if and only if it can be verified or falsified by sense experience. Like the statement, it's snowing outside, which can prove true or false by looking out the window. But this principle is problematic because the principle itself can't be proven true or false by sense experience. Where in the universe is the truth value of this belief to be found? Can we see it under a microscope? The absurdity of these questions reveal that the principle itself cannot be proven true or false by sense experience, and thus is self-refuting. For this reason, the objection fails. I'm Carlo Broussard with the Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
This is Bishop Robert Barron. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Ever wonder about the power of prayer? St. John Chrysostom states that prayer and converse with God is a supreme good. It is a partnership and union with God. As the eyes of the body are enlightened when they see light, so our spirit, when it is intent on God through prayer, is illumined by His infinite light. Let God's infinite light be your guiding light. Ask Him to guide you daily in your prayer, work, recreation, home life with family, and your friendships.
Mark Brumley, our guest. That's a pretty good day when you have Jimmy Akin followed by Mark Brumley. You're doing pretty good. I feel like we're doing pretty good here, Nick. Why am I getting no approval? Yeah, that's what I wanted, Nick. I wanted you to nod your head and say, yes, that's pretty good. 888-318-7884 is the number. Mark Brumley is president of Ignatius Press, and you can visit them at ignatius.com. They make movies. They do books and CDs and DVDs. They're all kinds of wonderful things to bring you closer to Jesus and His church. So go over there and visit them. Up next is Stephen calling from Washington, D.C., and I assume he's listening on Guadalupe Radio because that's the station in Washington, D.C., but I'll just go with that assumption. Stephen, your question for Mark Brumley.
Hey, how you doing? I'm actually using the app right now, but my question has to do with the rosary, the way that I've been praying the rosary recently, and I was just wondering if it's okay to do or if it's like heretical, something like that. So what I've been doing is kind of similar to the Eastern practice of hesychasm, where I'll be, for each Hail Mary, I'll take a deep breath in for the first part and then a deep breath and then breathe out for like the second half of the prayer. So like it's one.
Yes. Okay.
Hail Mary. And yeah.
So you're wondering if you're now a heretic for doing that?
Present.
Oh, my goodness. Cut him off. Get him off the air. He's going to corrupt the whole country. Everybody's going to start praying the rosary the way he does.
You cannot pray a Latin prayer like the rosary as using an Eastern method like hesychasm, right?
Really? Are you serious?
Somewhat facetious. I do not believe that Stephen is a heretic.
You're just saying it's just spiritually inappropriate. Is that what you're trying to imply?
I am not. I'm actually thinking it's very beautiful what he's doing.
No, what he is doing is very beautiful, and it's a perfectly legitimate way to pray the rosary. I think it's kind of neat. I often pray the rosary when I'm driving in traffic, so I probably might not try that there. But in other contexts, that's certainly something to try. So I think I might give it a try myself.
How's that,
Stephen? I think that's great.
Okay, Stephen.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah.
God bless you. Yeah, pray that rosary. Pray. That's the thing. Pray the rosary. Anonymous is up next. Anonymous in an anonymous location. Your question for Mark Brumley.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a pretty quick question. I'm teaching first grade CCD, and we start on Sunday. And I want to try to teach them a little bit about the Mass. And I wondered if it would be okay to teach them the response to the Lord be with you by having them say, and with your spirit, just as a greeting every morning, or if that's something that's only allowed for the priest to do.
No, it's perfectly legitimate. I would explain to them what you're doing and why you're doing it so that it'll help them make the connection with Mass, but perfectly legitimate to do.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Hey,
have a great...
no, don't go anywhere anonymous because you're a CCD teacher, which makes you one of our heroes here. You are doing the hard work passing on. So I want to send you a free copy of Jimmy Akin's new book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. In order to do that, you will have to be not anonymous to Marie, but that's up to you. You want to hang on and she'll
get... I will be not anonymous to get that great book. Yes, thank you.
Yes, God bless you for teaching CCD and God bless everybody who is back to teaching CCD. CCD. I don't know. Catechetical Sunday, is that this Sunday? Or
I think it's this.
I am not sure.
Because then we get the catechists get blessed at church and all that. And you,
I think it's actually September 15th, but I may be wrong about that.
September 15th. All right. Well, it's coming up in any case. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to say thank you for doing that great work and send you a little something free. Appreciate it, Anonymous.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you too. Mark, up next, George in Santa Rosa, California. So this could possibly be a neighbor of yours. I don't know. But George, your question.
Well,
for Mark.
I live about an hour away from Santa Rosa, but that's okay.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you, Sai, for taking my question. I've been on your show before, and I am not a Catholic. I am a Protestant. Okay, my question has to do with the episcopacy, so-called bishops and archbishops. They, in the United States and pretty much every country in the world, they are appointed by the Pope in Rome. So you have at least two problems. So these men who are in charge of these dioceses and archdioceses in America and in the other country are appointed by a foreign entity. And I would argue a hostile foreign entity. Second, a number of these men were not born in America. For example, we have several prelates in the United States, archbishops and archbishops, who were born in Mexico. When it comes to the question of whatever euphemism you want to call it, the Latino Catholic invasion or whatever, they have a serious conflict of interest.
All right. So what would you like Mark to answer for you? I see how you're setting it up, but what's the question for Mark?
How can we possibly correct this situation? It's simply a matter of, these prelates are a threat to our national security.
Okay, fair enough. I'm trying to think. I think we only have one bishop in the U.S. born in Mexico. He is a wonderful bishop. He's the Archbishop of Los Angeles, as a matter of fact. Mark, what are we going to do about the fact that we Catholics have popes, the Pope appoints the bishops, and it appears that many of them have Latino last names? How can we fix that situation?
It doesn't seem like a situation needs fixing. If the Catholic Church appoints bishops, the Pope appoints bishops on the basis of what, in his judgment, is the best interest of the Catholic Church as a church. Of course, he's got to take into consideration where those bishops are going to be leading, and that means he has to be mindful of the countries in which those bishops will reside. But his interest is not, and it shouldn't be, primarily what's in the best interest, politically speaking, of any given country that he's appointing bishops for. His interest, and I certainly wouldn't want it to be that, his interest is what's in the best interest of the Catholic Church. So what's in the best interest of the mission of the Church that Christ has given to the Church? Now, that doesn't make popes infallible about their episcopal appointments. They can sometimes make mistakes or appoint people that are not good bishops or whatever. But their business is not primarily what's in the political interest of the country to which they are appointing bishops. So that's the first point. Second point, with respect to a conflict of interest, I'm not quite sure I see the concept, unless the implication is that people who have a Hispanic background are ipso facto disloyal to the country. I just would say I don't see any evidence of that, nor do I have any reason to suppose that a Latino bishop is going to be disloyal to America any more than an Irish bishop or a German bishop or whatever. So I just don't I don't find the objection convincing.
Fair enough. Archbishop Gomez, by the way, I didn't get his name in before, but Archbishop Gomez, the Archbishop of Los Angeles, born in Mexico. I almost feel like we should confess that we love one another as Catholics, and whether you're Mexican or Irish or Italian,
absolutely,
that what we do as Catholics is we love one another. So
exactly,
yeah.
These are, and national borders are important, but they're not all important. They're
right.
Not more important than the unity of the Catholic Church.
And we certainly love Archbishop Gomez. So I'll thank you for the call and for the opportunity to get to say we love each other as Catholics. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Mark Brumley right after this.
Your questions, Catholic answers, live.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament, from the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important. This pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
Catholic organizations are doing amazing things in this world. We want to hear your take on tomorrow's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Now let's get back to Cy Kellett and Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We have two archbishops in California, and I'm as a Southern Californian, I'm not saying Archbishop Gomez is better than yours up there in Northern California, Corleone.
Well, I was going to mention him a little bit, but I didn't want to get into a. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I'm just I mean I think it's generally acknowledged that our archbishop is better than your archbishop. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that anything negative. I'm just saying that Archbishop Gomez is. Oh, wait a second.
I somehow think that that's sort of not like an appropriate thing to say.
I'm only kidding, because Archbishop Corleone is actually a San Diegan, and we love him here, and he's going on a cruise with us.
That's right.
In June.
Go.
So, well, you think I'm being...
I don't know. He may not be going now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. We love Archbishop. Of course we love Archbishop Corleone.
But I would like to... Can I say a little something about the previous call, not to sort of... just the caller who isn't here to defend himself. But I mean, I do think we need to be very careful when we talk about different ethnic and cultural groups in the United States. So the Catholic Church is, as I said, a big community. We're a big church. We have law, you know, we're universal. We're not confined to this particular ethnic group or that particular ethnic group or whatever. And also, you know, there are attitudes in American society that looks upon people who are, you know, looks at people who are different from a different cultural background and makes a generalization about those kinds of folks. And we have to watch that. That is a, it's,
Yes. I mean, at its root, that's kind of a racist attitude, and that's not something that we want to be supportive of. Even apart from questions about immigration and acculturation, those are all important political things. The church has something to say about them. The church isn't primarily a political entity, so you know we're trying to take the moral teaching of Jesus and apply it to concrete situations. And sometimes, you know, Christians who are committed to the same principles will disagree about the best way to implement those principles. But whatever our agreements, disagreements on questions of immigration and acculturation, we should not disagree as followers of Jesus that all people of any ethnic group or cultural group or racial group is made in the image and likeness of God and needs to be valued as someone with an inherent dignity. So we have to be careful about this kind of talk. So,
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that you saying that because it is serious business. But we just love each other. that's what the Catholic Church does. And our caller said he wasn't Catholic, but it's also the case that Catholics we get this way in-house as well. It's not just from exterior criticism. And if you're not prepared to love everybody, if you're not prepared to love all your brothers and sisters in the Catholic Church, your problem's with Jesus, not with anybody else. Let's go to John in South Dakota, listening on the Great Real Presence Radio up there in South Dakota. John, delighted to have your call. Your question for Mark Brumley. And you know what, John up there, and let me give out the phone number before I do that, though, because I have made a mistake and not given out the phone number for a long time. So 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Mark Brumley is our guest, and I'm sorry I made you wait. John in South Dakota, go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question has to do with the homily. I went to Mass a few months ago, and I was waiting for the homily, and after the gospel, and after the gospel, the priest didn't address the gospel. He went off into a rant about football players kneeling and how football players... No one's, you know, the only person we kneel for is Christ. I mean, he really went on. It was offensive to me. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't just sit there. I got up, I genuflected, I made a sign of the cross, I left Mass. My question is, what is the appropriate response when you go to Mass and instead of, you know, receiving instruction on my Catholic base, I'm getting political stuff. I didn't know how else to respond.
Okay. Mark, what do you say?
Well, it's a good question. I've been in the situation myself where I've been at Mass and heard things in a homily, not just that were challenging, but which I thought were inappropriate. It doesn't usually happen in my parish, but I've been to churches where that does happen. And so it poses a challenge. So then I think what you have to do is you pray for the person. If he's saying something that you regard as inappropriate or offensive, you pray for that person. If it's a priest or a deacon in a homily, pray for them. And then you just try to offer up the suffering that's come as a result of this offensive action, offered up with the Eucharist. I think it's certainly appropriate in a respectful way after Mass, you know, to approach the homilist and say, you know, you said this, Father, or you said this, Deacon, I don't understand that, or I don't agree with it, or I don't think it was appropriate. Now, we have to understand sometimes in teaching the teaching of the church or proclaiming the gospel, there are going to be things in that teaching or in that message that have political implications or political application. They're not primarily political teaching. The church isn't a political society or a political action committee, but there can be things in the teaching of Jesus. There are things in the teaching of Jesus that'll have political implications. So we want to be discerning and we want to be receptive to whatever the church has to offer us in terms of the gospel, even when it has political implications, and try to form our faith and our conscience accordingly.
But we're going to have to also recognize, and this is where it's really important for the homilist to understand that on many, many issues, there are different, legitimately different ways in which Catholics can approach those issues, as I said earlier, all the while affirming and holding to the same spiritual teaching or the same theological or moral teaching. About a lot of these issues, there are differences of opinion. And you have a certainly legitimate difference of opinion on how you what you think about sports figures kneeling or not kneeling, praying or not praying, or doing all these kinds of things. And so it would be imprudent to bring that up in a homily if you were to address it in such a way as to give the impression to the congregation that everybody has to agree with the priest or the deacon in the homily and his particular view of the matter. And that's a problem. So I say, this is how I handle it. I try to prayerfully, when something is said I think is inappropriate or offensive, I pray for the priest or deacon involved. And if I can do so respectfully afterward, I express my disagreement. You may not change his mind, but at the very least, you help him see that there are people in the congregation who can respond in a respectful way who disagree with them.
What do you think, John?
I thank you very much. That is what I did. You know, I have a relationship with the priest. He's a good guy. He's a spiritual man. And, you know, I don't know if we came to any understanding afterwards of that. I had a kind of a bad phone call with him. He told me, well, if I felt that way, I didn't have to come to Mass at his parish anymore. Well, he called me back within 2 or 3 minutes and backed off of that situation. And it's important to me because I was away from the church for like 30, 35
yeah. right.
or 40 years. And,
right.
Well, you know, I have to say, priests get, it's crazy the amount of pressure they get sometimes. I know that here, Mark, and maybe you get it as well in your ministry, people will want us to take a political position and sometimes be mad at us. Like, how can you not be speaking up about this or that? And we try to speak very clearly on moral issues, but politically, you are free. We don't have any special charism to know what's true politically or not, nor does your priest, nor does your bishop. The church has teachings, and we want you to have those. But I do think it's easy to get pressured sometimes into say something about this, say something about that, and forgetting, well, that's not our role as
that's
Catholic
right.
answers, or that's not a priest's right. role to do that.
Right. That's right. There's clear ethical teaching, and some things obviously violate that teaching that needs to be addressed, and it can have political implications, and those things need to be addressed. But then you move down a step or two and you have to say, well, yes, there are differences of opinion among conscientious, committed Catholics.
Right.
That doesn't mean, by the way, sometimes this is taken to be a kind of political relativism, which implies, you know, here to say, well, there is no Catholic position on this. Well, that's true in the sense that the church doesn't endorse or oppose particular candidates for office, and nor does the church, as the church, establish particular pieces of legislation, things of that sort. The fact that reasonable Catholics can differ about a thing doesn't mean that there's no right position. It could be that one side or another in this debate, in which there's reasonable grounds for disagreement, is correct or more correct than the other side. It's just that that's not evident simply from the fact that the people involved are committed Catholics, that they're committed to Catholic principles, Catholic teachings. You know, right. This Catholic may support, I'll be, you know, a little facetious or flip, you know, this school lunch program, that Catholic over there may oppose that, think it's a bad idea and prefer a different approach to dealing with that particular issue. That doesn't mean that simply because both of them are bringing their Catholic faith to bear on the issues of the day, that the church is irrelevant because there are different positions taken by Catholics, nor does it mean that there isn't necessarily a right position. It's just that it's not immediately evident from the principles themselves. And that's
yeah.
kind of hard for people, especially in a very politicized environment such as we're in today, where people want to They want to smuggle in, as it were, some kind of authority to say, you got to have to agree with me politically on this issue.
Right.
And the church is a big authority.
Yeah. But hearing John, I guess why I want to dwell on this for a moment is that John's away from the church for 25 years. Yes. All of us who have or who speak for the church, whether it's as a little lay apostle like us, or whether it's someone with authority like a priest or a bishop, we should not do anything that drives a good Christian away from the sacraments because we wanted to make a political point, or because we wanted to, have our opinion respected. That's a misprioritization.
Right. And of course, we don't want to leave the impression that priests or deacons, when they're giving homilies, can never say anything that someone somewhere might find offensive.
No.
Because they're just teaching the gospel, there are going to be some people who are offended.
Right.
Nevertheless, you don't set out to offend, and especially when you're getting into the area of politics, or this wasn't even really so much a political thing, it was talking about more of a cultural phenomena. When you get into that area, you need to preface, if you're going to bring it up at all, and it's probably a bad idea to bring it up, but if you're going to bring it up at all, you need to preface it and say, this is my opinion. I recognize people might disagree with this, but here's my thinking on it, so that gives people in the congregation room to say, well, you raised a good point. I don't agree with you still, but I respect you in the way that you brought it up. And that tends to contribute to a more healthy Catholic environment rather than this constant politicization, characterization of people who disagree with us as, sellouts or wicked or whatever.
Yeah. John, don't leave the church over it, though. All right?
Oh, I won't. I appreciate the work that you people do.
Well, you really honor us with your call, John. Welcome home. Glad you're back. Glad to hear nothing's going to shake you from that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Mark Brumley right after this.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
a
priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
the Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Mark Brumley is our guest. Mark is president of Ignatius Press. You can find out all about them at Ignatius.com. Open Forum means anybody can call with any question at all, whether you're Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Let us go now to Michael in Maryland. Michael, your question for Mark Brumley.
Hi, gentlemen. I was born and raised Catholic, and one of the things I struggle most with is understanding the role of celebrating the saints and the feast days in my life. I feel generally that that effort can be put to reading the Bible and being more involved in my faith directly with God. And intellectually, I understand and accept the ability for the saints to intercede for us, but how much emphasis are we supposed to put on the saints' lives as opposed to directly looking at the Bible and Jesus?
Wow, that's a good question. I'm going to give you a kind of a mundane answer. We have to be balanced here. The purpose of the saints is to glorify God. That's why they exist. God makes saints to express his goodness, his love, which we would say is God's glory. So if we are celebrating saints' feast days and other aspects of the lives of saints in ways that glorify God, point people to Jesus, that's doing it the right way. If we do these things in a way that takes from or is seen as a rivalry towards Jesus, and I don't really know of Catholics who do that, but I can understand in theory, I could see how that might happen, but just my experience of the church today is the Catholics who tend to emphasize saints' feast days don't usually see the saints as rivals with Jesus, but we have to make sure that, in fact, that we are understanding the saints, the lives of the saints, the role of the saints in the church as sort of elder brothers and sisters in Christ, disciples who follow the Lord and provide good examples for us and who are present now with the Lord and eager to support the ongoing work of the church through their intercessory prayer. So I think keeping that in mind, learning more about how Jesus manifests himself through this particular saint, you know, one way of thinking of the saints is they're sort of the multifaceted expression of the life of Jesus lived in different times, different places by different people. And so if we're looking at the saints correctly, they should be bringing us closer to Jesus. What do you think about that, Michael?
I think intellectually I accept that, and I understand the role of kind of these guides in our life. For example, Mother Teresa of Calcutta and her sacrifice, right. And is a great role model and guides us. Sometimes I feel, however, we have, as Catholics, almost an overemphasis of feast days as opposed to the Eucharist. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not a rejection of the saints. It's the emphasis.
Well, I can only say that I can understand that as a concept. I don't encounter it in my own life or in my parish life and so on. So it's a little bit of an abstraction for me. I do know that the closer you get to the saints, where you feel like they're part of your spiritual family, you're part of theirs, it's probably going to be something that's going to diminish that sense of overemphasis. But I mean, I remember many years ago, a Baptist friend of mine, we were talking about the saints, and he didn't believe in the intercession of the saints. But I said, you know, I'll bet you there have been times when you're studying the Bible or something like that, but studying St. Paul, you wish that St. Paul could be there to help explain himself. And he says, yeah, that's true. And I said, you ever think about asking St. Paul, even a moment of frustration, Paul, what are you talking about here? And he said, you know, I wouldn't generally acknowledge this to my Baptist brethren, but yes, I have. That I've been in exactly that situation. I said, well, that kind of shows you a little bit on an emotional level and a spiritual emotional level how Catholics see the intercession of the saints. So I think Catholics better integrating the saints into their own spiritual lives and their discipleship with Jesus should diminish that problem where it exists. But that's just my take on it.
All right, Michael.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very, very much for the call. We go now to Joshua in Norman, Oklahoma, listening on the Oklahoma Catholic Broadcasting Network. Joshua, your question for Mark Brumley.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, Joshua.
Hi, good evening. I'm reading a book about the history of Vatican II, and the more I read about Vatican II and the Novus Ordo, I'd like to ask the question, would it be fair to describe the new Mass as a Protestantized Mass?
My view is no. I don't think it's fair to call it that. I know there are people who, for a variety of reasons, dislike or object to various aspects of the Missal of 1970. And we need to make a distinction. That's the Missal of 1970 is not something that the Second Vatican Council itself
promulgated, but that came some years later. And there are all kinds of questions we can raise about how the new so-called new mass was promulgated, how it's celebrated in any particular parish, and so on. But I don't think the rite itself is accurately described as a Protestantized version of the mass. All the essential elements of Catholic teaching are present in it. So I don't, and nothing that's distinctively Protestant is in it. So I from my perspective, I don't see it as being Protestantized.
Joshua?
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Fair
Very
enough.
Good.
Up next, Dylan. Don't have a location for you, Dylan, but we're glad you're here. Your question, please, for Mark Brumley.
Oh, hey there.
Hey there.
Can you hear me?
We can, Dylan. Your question.
Cool. Yes. So I'm very interested in the Catholic faith, and my wife isn't quite in the same place as I. And so one thing that she mentioned briefly while we're talking about it is that essentially what she was saying is that if we believe the core and basic doctrines like the Incarnation, the Trinity, hypostatic union, stuff like that, then it really doesn't matter what you like, what denomination you belong to, because as long as you're doing the things like Lord's Supper or baptism, then it's fully valid to the same extent as it would be in the Catholic Church. And I was just wondering, to what degree is that true? To what degree is that not true? Because if you look at different denominations, like we're currently Baptist, they teach that baptism is symbolic, you know? So, and then that the Lord's Supper is symbolic as well. But if you look at the Catholic Church, it's different. So what do you think about that?
Okay.
Well, I think I'm a Catholic, so I believe Jesus Christ established the church. The church that he established is the Catholic Church. There are other churches and ecclesial communities that share elements of that Catholic faith, more or less. And there are these other communities that have things that I think depart from what Christ gave to his church and intends for his church. So for me, these things are not minor or secondary. I think they're important because they came from Jesus, and I want everything that Jesus wants. So if Jesus established these things, I understand Baptists don't believe that Jesus established the Catholic Church. That's why they're Baptists. But as a Catholic, I believe he does. That's why I'm a Catholic. So I'm going to say these are not unimportant things. Now, can they be exaggerated so we lose to such a degree that we lose sight of what we have in common? Sure, they can be, but they're not. It's not a minor thing whether or not Jesus established the Eucharist and established a priesthood and gave us sacraments, and whether he intends us to baptize infants or not, whether he guides his church through leaders, bishops, and a pope. And these are not secondary questions; they're important questions. And Christians of goodwill. Often they come down on different sides of that, but I'm not going to tell you they're not important questions. They're very important questions, and most Baptists regard them as important questions. If they didn't regard them as important questions, they would teach these things as at least optional or at least legitimate different ways of expressing Christianity. Most Baptists don't do that. They say, no, they may be nice about it and ecumenical, but they're going to say, no, we don't believe this. We don't believe in infant baptism. We don't believe in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. We don't believe that there is an authority structure that unites the whole church. So these are important points, and we have to talk about them, pray about them, and come to settled Christian convictions about where the truth lies.
And Dylan, we will have to leave it there. Thank you very, very much for the call. Mark Brumley, president of Ignatius Press, thanks for doing a great hour with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
And again, we'll remind folks, pray for Mark's mom, who is in the last stages of her life, and pray for Mark and their whole family. Tomorrow, we're going to have a very, very serious discussion about transgenderism and the whole transgender movement. I really hope you'll join us for that tomorrow. God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.